Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Good afternoon, Paul. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. You're very soft today, Harry.
Is it the seriousness
of the topic, or is it just,
Well, it's a very serious topic, and it's one that we will all face in one form or the other today, but... I don't know. Maybe I'm just mellowing out as I get older. I don't know.
Yeah. Usually, not likely. Bouncing, and you're just all over the place. And when you come, yeah, you have to settle you down.
What did you call me last time when I came in all dressed up? And
natty.
Natty. Okay. Yeah.
You're always nattily dressed.
Nattily dressed. So, yeah, no, I don't know.
And no, that's not a cross-gender term. Nattily dressed is not a cross-gender term.
It's been that kind of week. I don't know whether it's the sort of the disappointment, you know, from having my expectations so high about El Nino and not getting the rain.
It's El No-Show so far.
El No-Show so far, right? So I don't know. I guess things change, right?
Yeah.
Life changes. It hands you different things. But no, it's just been kind of a long week. Yeah, started a couple of interesting stuff.
You know what, Rod? You're getting older.
I'm getting older.
And
I'm waiting for the wiser part to kick in.
We're waiting for that.
But no, we do. We actually have a really special guest today.
Not like the last few shows. We didn't have anybody.
We
special.
Didn't have special guests before. No, we never do. This, you know, all the shows we've been doing for a year now. None of our guests. Well, you know,
I love when hosts say
of them were.
Tonight we have a really good show. What? Last night you had chopped liver. You had nothing.
No. But you know, it's actually, you know, we are coming on. And I got to figure out what the actual date is, Paul.
Do you
remember?
I'm old. I don't remember.
Oh gosh. So you're no help. But it's been almost a year, or we just crossed over into a year of doing the show. Okay, I would have never, in my wildest dreams, thought that we would actually find enough stuff to talk about.
Who knew that you could talk about aging in so many different ways here?
A year, four hours a month, talking about aging,
yeah,
of one form or the other.
Yeah, I feel tired just thinking about it.
Well, so it is a milestone of sorts, right? And when we first started the show, the first show we did was with Casey Kasem's daughter, Carrie.
Yeah, that was a real eye-opener, elder abuse.
About elder abuse. I mean, talk about not starting with a lighthearted topic, right?
Yeah. And her father, the famous Casey Kasem, and they're shuttling him around the country, the second wife, to keep him away from the first wife's kids, you know.
Well,
craziness.
Well, and I want to just give a shout-out to Carrie. Carrie, thanks for the invite yesterday. She sent me out an invite. We got together with a bunch of her entourage and her boyfriend, Jesse. If you guys are listening, it was really great. Just some jazz in Huntington Beach.
Ooh.
And again, showing my selection of choice,
wow,
right? But there were some young people in the bar. There was just nice jazz. And anyway, and actually her boyfriend, I think it's boyfriend or maybe fiancé, Jesse, I'm sorry, I can't keep up with you guys.
Some guy she hangs out with.
But his father, Marty Cove, is the guy who was, what would most people remember? The Cobra Kai sensei from Karate Kid. And so I hung out with Cobra Kai sensei yesterday, you know, from Karate Kid. And they're a really, really nice group of people. And I thanks for inviting me and including me, Carrie. But so, again, here we are about a year after we started the show. And there are certain topics that will always be around. And there are certain people that have really been, in my mind, at least locally, very, very involved in raising awareness and really putting focus on things that we don't want to really think about them.
No.
We want to kind of like avoid them until it's almost too late to do something about them. Tend to have more of a reactive
I've got my ears, hands over my ears. I don't want to hear it.
Right. And Patty's heard me say this before. You know, a lot of times, I think in Southern California, it's even more amplified, a denial factor.
Well, it's a youthful culture. It's sun and fun. It's not old and whatever.
Right. And we don't do change. You know, we don't take winter clothes and summer clothes. We don't put salt on driveways.
We don't have 100-year-old buildings. We tear them down.
Everything is new again, right?
Yes.
So, you know, Alzheimer's and dementia.
Is that what we're talking about here today?
We're talking about Alzheimer's.
I don't have Alzheimer's. I just have sometimers.
No, well, you know what? I'm not qualified to diagnose you, but you definitely have something.
She could discuss this today.
So my guest today, and it's really, really a treat for me, is to have Patty Mouton here. Hi, Patty.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. I'm loving the fact that we're sitting in the room. It's been a long time, way too long.
I know. It's nice to be in the same room with you.
Yeah, thank you. So likewise. And why don't you introduce the guest that you brought along.
Yes, I'd like you to meet Christine Chow.
Hi, Christine.
Christine is the general manager for the Orange County Aging Services Collaborative,
right,
and a wonderful colleague and friend. And we hope to illuminate and enlighten people on this problem that nobody wants to have.
No.
Okay, so I'm just going to – people can't see this on radio, obviously, but we definitely have a range of ages in this room. No, nobody's saying
anything. I don't know
anything.
Where you're going.
This is an uncomfortable silence. Whoa,
right.
I dare to say that.
I'll grab the top spot. I'll be the old geezer. Okay.
Actually, I think I'm tied with you.
Oh, you can't be.
Oh, we got more boomers in the room. More boomers. But, I mean, Christine, without being too rude, Xer? Gen Xer?
How old are you, Christine?
What are you?
You're
young. Are you a millennial?
Yeah.
Are you, what, you're
yeah,
a millennial.
So I am 28, millennial.
Yeah, she's a millennial.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the reason why I raised this is because it came up like three times over the last week for me, right? I'm talking to people. People actually don't get that the people involved in aging and senior and adult industry, the assumption is they're all old.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I mean, I'm the president of the Historical Society in San Clemente, and the assumption is that all my membership pretty much is, you know, like I go to the senior center basically to make sure that we have our meetings. Right?
That's right.
Right. So it's actually fascinating, and I want to just take a moment and point that out, that people are involved in this provision of service, support, that isn't just a one generational issue.
That's interesting.
There are people
yeah.
that are involved in it. We had a couple of ladies that were from, I think, what was it?
Caregivers
Direct, I think
yeah.
it was,
mm-hmm.
that basically were millennials.
Yeah.
And we've talked about how I think there is something that people are not really connecting with, that millennials and baby boomers actually have similar characteristics, that they have a sense of connection and involvement. They may be more electronic-based versus person-to-person-based, but there's certainly, plus, it's grandparent-grandchild,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's a relationship historically between grandparent-grandchild that is more easy, shall I say, than maybe parent and child.
Correct.
You
yes.
know,
mm-hmm.
and
so
I think they want to change.
People are open to exchange.
I think they want to change right. the world in positive ways, like we grew up thinking. I think the generations in between kind of got, you know, blasé and, you know, burned out and cynical.
So what I find interesting is reflected in the current political
malaise
circus that we're experiencing. Okay, without getting one side or the other, is that it's funny because if you look.
She probably feels the burn. She's probably feeling the burn.
Well, you're going to put her on the spot like that? You can answer that question if you want.
I'm doing fine. But yeah, that really resonates with me. I had a close relationship with my grandparents.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, so I have a master's in gerontology.
Yeah.
But I see that a lot of people that are getting into the field that are my age
yeah.
have a close relationship with their grandparents, maybe saw how it was difficult for their parents,
right.
if they for their parents and grandparents,
to
that
deal,
sandwich
to deal with aging, yeah.
generation.
Yeah, and it's that personal story. We always talk about, and we tell guests, we kind of warn them, is that what we want to hear is, how did you get involved?
So let's ask Patty.
So Patty, how did you get involved? I know you've been involved for a little bit now.
Well, I have been. I've been on staff at Alzheimer's Orange County for coming up on 11 years.
Wow.
And I volunteered for almost 5 years before that, and I kept my day job, which was in hospice care.
Wow.
I did a career transition about 18 years ago because I saw what need there was to improve not only end-of-life care from a personal story. I had a very good friend die, and I watched how that process happened.
Mm-hmm.
And as I became more and more engaged in improving end-of-life care, working in hospice care, it became apparent to me that dementia in all of its forms was a huge part of the problem in dealing with people as they got older
mm-hmm.
and more fragile, and we weren't addressing it. And this is, you know, 15, 16 years ago.
So give us the statistic. We had, not on this show, but a couple of years ago, Jim McAleer, from your president of your organization,
yes.
Great guy, And I never forgot, this was several years ago, he had some startling statistics about the number of people who are going to have some, maybe not Alzheimer's, but some sort of mental degradation, some kind of
cognitive impairment.
There you go. Give us some statistics.
Well,
shock us here.
If you look at Orange County as a microcosm of society, of the United States, we're aging faster here than any place else in the country.
People have said that.
That's correct.
We seem to have a larger concentration of older people than anywhere in America. That's what somebody claimed on one of our earlier shows.
We actually do, and we're aging faster, so we'll have more people turning 85 than any place else in the country. By 2020, we'll have more than 750,000 residents of Orange County who are over age 60.
Oh, my goodness.
And of that, we know that at about age 65, maybe between 15 and 20% of those folks have either Alzheimer's or a related form of dementia.
Wow.
By the time we're 85, about 50% of us will have something.
Betty, let me ask you this, because, again, it's not just age-related.
Correct. Correct.
Right? So
age is the biggest factor in risk.
Right.
But there's a variant of Alzheimer's disease that's genetic that strikes people sometimes as young as their late 40s.
Right.
And it's devastating because the course of the disease is faster, it's more virulent, so people become debilitated much more quickly. And what we don't like to think about is that Alzheimer's disease is now the third leading cause of death in Orange County, and about the fourth or fifth leading cause of death nationwide.
Does Alzheimer's actually lead to death? I just somehow think it's memory loss, and that doesn't mean you're going to die from it, but you're saying it can actually lead to
death? It's a fatal disease. It causes brain failure, and your brain is the center of your nervous system. So everything is controlled. When your brain fails, all other systems fail.
Well, it's ironic we have you on a couple days after Nancy Reagan passes away, who spent so many years trying to bring this issue to light after Ronald Reagan, who's so beloved, particularly here in Orange County, came public and faded away. And as I saw an interview with her years ago, and she said the hardest part of the disease for her was it's like he died, but he's still in the other room.
Right. They call it the long goodbye, and she really exemplified that in the years that she cared for him, protected him, and really supported him so that he could have the greatest amount of dignity, age in place, and really became such a vocal advocate for understanding that this disease can strike anyone at any time in their adulthood, and that it is devastating, and it's not just the person who has the disease who's impacted, it's their entire family.
And she really raised some eyebrows in the Republican ranks, because she pushed for stem cell research and other sorts of things.
Right, which went against the grain of ideology on the party side.
Right.
Okay, and that was a while ago. I mean, this isn't like something that happened yesterday with President Reagan.
He lived for years.
Why are we still finding ourselves today, Patty, in a situation where it almost seems as much strides as we have accomplished, we are just starting?
Well, we really have only hit the tip of the iceberg in our knowledge of Alzheimer's and related dementia. Just about everything we know we've learned in the last 25 years. This disease was only discovered at the turn of the century because we didn't live long enough to experience it. So the fact that we have gained an entire generation of life in less than a century means we have to look at the diseases of aging very differently. So in some respects, we haven't come nearly far enough in fighting this disease, but in other respects, we've made tremendous strides. We do have some treatments that help to stabilize the symptoms. There's a tremendous amount of research going on, and we just have to keep putting pressure on our legislature, especially federally, for more funding to the National Institutes of Health for research. We've got to get to a disease-modifying treatment and eventually to a cure, because we're all going to live a lot longer.
Yeah, that's what they say. So more and more of us are going to experience this. You're saying, again, the statistic, if you reach 85, 50% of them are going to have some sort of cognitive impairment.
That's correct. And most of the time, it will be Alzheimer's disease proper. Yes.
So I know you do a lot of outreach and a lot of advocacy and have done for a while. So are there reoccurring resistances, reoccurring blocks, reoccurring issues that you face today that you may have been facing all these years trying to advocate for this? Why isn't there enough funding going into this?
Well, the truth is quite a bit more funding has been allocated than even 4 or 5 years ago.
Right.
So it's very encouraging. We went from having only about $400 million in federal research dollars allocated from Congress to now closer to $900 million annually that Congress allocates to the National Institutes of Health. The problem is each clinical trial for a drug costs about $125 million.
Wow.
And there have been more than 100 drugs that went through a full course of clinical trials, and none of them produced the desired results.
Yikes.
That would be disease-modifying or cure. So we know we need to put more into this. We spend more like $4 billion a year on cancer research mm-hmm. nationally to the mm-hmm. National Institutes of Health. We need to get a war on Alzheimer's the same way we had a war on cancer. We need to
get... It sounds like a priority.
It's a priority thing.
Yeah.
But wouldn't you think as us baby boomers start to... start to feel our age and start to quit hiding our head in the sand and recognize where we're headed, that we're going to become more vocal about this?
Well, we hope so, and we are constantly looking to engage and invite people just like you to come with us.
Not me. I'm never going to get it, so don't look at me.
Never know. But to be part of our advocacy efforts, we mount major efforts, not only with our federal legislators, but with our state assembly mm-hmm. and state senate. And even at the municipal level, mm-hmm. we go to the city council meetings and talk about this as a local initiative, because that's how we get it to bubble up.
Well, and let's talk about that for a second, because, you know, we kind of talk about this on this show all the time, that a lot of things these days, part of it, kind of ironically, as the internet has opened up everything, it seems like the focus and the interest is, and the news aspect of things, is local.
Yes.
And so,
yes.
So
all things are local.
Politics is local.
That's right. The great Tip O'Neill.
Right. We're watching the national circus show, but basically it all comes down to what's happening in my own backyard.
Right. Sure.
And Paul, you just shared it, and we said it last show, is, you know, this is the largest concentration of seniors in the country is in Orange County by population. And in South County, it's even higher. It's like the largest concentration in Orange County is in South County. And you're talking about communities that are impacted by that reality.
We had the mayor of Mission Viejo.
Yeah,
exactly.
So, Patty, what you're talking about, I mean, absolutely the case. And if you don't have that buy-in at the local level.
Correct.
And what I mean by that is there's a lot of people, and it's not limited to like Alzheimer's or what have you, but anything that has a social consciousness aspect. So a lot of people that will wrap themselves in a cause, or they will basically, you know,
put
a bumper sticker on the back of their car, right? But when it really comes down to it, this isn't, when you're advocating for this at a local level, there are things that local municipality should look into. In provision of services,
correct.
Support, and I'm not talking about Meals on Wheels. I'm talking infrastructure-based changes.
Getting people to the doctors.
You're absolutely right. And in fact, we just very recently have received some very encouraging, promising news from our County Board of Supervisors here in Orange County. I am very impressed by the level of interest and recognition of the issues of seniors that I see from our supervisors, especially from the recently elected chair, Lisa Bartlett.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They really are
She's
in
been
tune.
Real big into this. Yeah, she's on one of the other
Most
shows.
Most certainly. And really looking at the issues, knowing that we need to look at housing for older adults. We need to look at transportation issues.
Absolutely.
Can they get to the doctor? Can they get to the market to get food? Do they need Meals on Wheels? Are they shut-ins?
Mm-hmm.
What could we do to support mm-hmm. them so that they could age in place with just a little extra support that our county system needs to be beefed up? We have a marvelous infrastructure in Orange County. Karen Roper, who directs the Orange County Community Resources Office and the mm-hmm. Office on Aging, is very much in tune to this. She's a social worker at heart, and she gets that we've got to do more for our older adults and that we've got to plan for it. We need a strategic plan for aging in Orange County.
Amen. I mean, I know I've been been talking about this for at least 8 years, that, you know, the aging in place factor is not four walls and a roof. It's my place means community, means immediate neighborhood.
Correct.
You know, the transportation aspect, when I volunteered for AmeriCorps and we did try to do volunteer driving programs, you know, for we worked with Veterans First and other places, that basically what is available today. And it goes back to this sort of resistance to handicap accessibility in ADA, okay? There's this thing about almost performing the minimum requirement, okay? Providing life...
Only do it
life
if I have to.
Life sustaining, and begrudgingly, by the way.
Yeah, begrudgingly.
Okay? But life sustaining transportation to hospitals or medical clinics, you know? Life sustaining. But where's the life enhancing? Where's the quality of life aspect of the infrastructure to provide this? And you know, I'm cynical. Okay, so when I see,
you look cynical. You're part of that sandwich generation.
I am.
I forgot
my vendetta mask actually today. So I am cynical. And whenever we're in sort of a political cycle, and I see a lot of this, you know, sort of embracement of where the largest, let's face it, voter blocks are. Right.
Yeah.
I wonder whether this is genuine. Whether, you know, 2 years from now it's going to basically do it. But
pandering to the population.
For the votes. The sad reality is this, especially in places like Orange County where we are, is that there, if we don't take care of this, at least start building towards this awareness and taking action towards changing the infrastructure. That affordable housing is not just for seniors.
That
affordable
kids.
Housing is for the kids that were born and raised in very affluent communities and cannot actually initiate their life.
Can't stay
there because they can't afford it.
Right.
So we lose brain drain.
We're going to be one big leisure world if we don't.
And we have all this aging population that basically, correct, is healthier than it's ever been, active, more active than it's ever been. But at the end of the day, there's certain realities. So when we argue against public transportation options that are really viable, when we argue against, you know, repurposing pieces of property from senior centers into a little bit more of a lifestyle kind of destination approach. Okay, when we engage people.
When we fight having Alzheimer's homes built in our community because I don't want those people wandering around.
Well,
actually,
it's fascinating because there's this whole thing, and it started with Newport Beach, it's even down in San Clemente now, this sort of anti-group home situation.
Yeah.
Well, when you basically
take your property down,
and they're trying to parcel out what kinds of group homes we don't like and what kind of group homes we might be okay with,
right?
But that's a very dangerous approach, because what happens when basically the seniors that are in the boarding care are actually healthier and can still drive? Now their cars are on the street as well, and now we got a parking problem. So it's almost like you gotta look at things differently, because the reality is in about 5 or 10 years. And we're not talking about just boomers. I mean, millennials, Xers, right? Every one of us is going to be impacted by this. And if the infrastructure isn't put in place, we're just kicking the can down the road.
Right.
So let me ask one other question before everybody pipes up here. And this is the common theme of the show. Yes, we need to take group action. We need to wake up to this stuff here. I think the problem goes deeper. I think the problem is me and my generation. We ain't ever going to get old. We can't admit. I choke when I say I'm 60. I can't believe this is coming at me here. I think there's a giant denial. People don't even want to talk about this stuff,
for it. That may be you. There's a lot of people out there that actually, I think, take pride now. And it's not necessarily the majority as of yet, but it's definitely been an increase from my experience of people that actually embrace that point in their life where the number is just a number, you know, that they're not limited in any shape or form. In fact, I mean, you're a perfect example, Patty. I mean, you change of career, okay?
I changed careers in my 40s. I'm proud to say I'm going to turn 60 this year. I don't have a problem with it. I don't feel like I'm getting older. I feel like I'm getting ready.
How do you feel?
How old do I feel? I feel energized. I can't put a number on it, Rod.
So it's perfect.
Yeah.
But let me ask you the question. So have you joined AARP? Would you go to a senior center?
Oh, that's like the litmus test.
Would you call yourself a senior citizen? No, because I think there's a resistance to all those terms. Senior centers, AA, retired people.
I don't have any problem getting a senior discount when I go someday.
Well, I'll take the money. Yeah, all right. But I just, we've talked about that.
She didn't answer your question, right?
The boomers are going to redefine what it's like to get older. We know that. We redefined what it was to be 20. We redefined what we were hippies, and then we were yuppies. You know, we've all done all these different things. So something's coming. We don't know
we're
what it is.
We're leading the charge for not only healthy, energized aging, but being in control of how we're going to age.
Independent decision making.
And you know what? Getting older is so much better than the alternative.
Yeah, right.
Because,
yeah.
You know, no one gets off this planet alive.
Nobody's getting out
so
alive.
We might as well
might
make
the
best of it.
You let me know. You drop me a postcard. No, I'm gonna take advantage of the fact, because I know a lot of people probably are listening in because it's Patty.
Yes.
But I will say this, okay, and I've said it, people are going, yeah, you've been droning on this for about 8 years. Take that senior center. Turn it into a wellness center, for God's sake. Okay, I'm Global Wellness Day Ambassador this year, right? I mean, there's an awareness that transcends multiple age levels, it socioeconomic levels. There's this things that unifies people. Turn it into a wellness center, for
don't
God's sake.
Don't just play Mahjong
You know, there was I don't know if you saw it. I posted it on Facebook. There was a little skit, and I think it was from Australia, where this aerobics instructor walks into this multifunction space. It looked like in a senior center, and all the seniors sitting around, and it looked like they were ready to play bingo. And this instructor walks in. She doesn't even pay attention what room she's in. She walks in with this big boombox, a la like 80s boombox. Right?
Yes.
She puts it down, says, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'm late." And she pushes the thing, and she starts doing, you know, Zumba or whatever.
Yes.
And she's like, "Yeah, let's go," you know. And they're looking at her. She's shaking. And she's like, "You know, shake what your mama gave you, right?" and then basically they're all up and starting to do line dancing.
Absolutely.
To her, right? And here come and then the door opens, and here's the older lady with the bingo ball, you know.
Oh, that's so fun.
And so it's like, you know, we have this visual in our minds of what that aging is supposed to look like. That's not doesn't have to be a senior center.
That could look
that
like that.
That could be. It's got a commercial kitchen. Bring in a chef. Do nutritional classes. You know. Do meditation classes, throw in a little, you know, labyrinth in the back area. I mean, these are prime real estate pieces that municipalities pay for.
Right.
And they're basically, rather than losing usage.
First, you got to get rid of the term, as you say, though. I ain't going to a senior center.
No, I saw the look in Patty's face when you asked her, and I know your answer. Yeah, you guys are not going to go to a senior center.
Right.
No.
Right.
You know,
but
just
many communities are actually doing exactly what you're suggesting. I live in Laguna Niguel, and I actually was recently appointed to the Senior Citizens Commission to help inform and advise the operation of the senior center, but which it truly is called a community center.
Right.
And
yes.
It does have cooking classes, and it does have wonderful programming for all aspects of the community, a little concentrated for people that are older adults, but marvelous, marvelous opportunities. One in particular is they have the high school kids come over once a week after school to teach anybody who's having trouble learning how to use their specialty devices, their iPhones and their iPads and their droids. Well, these kids who are brilliant are really opening up major doors for people that are just a little bit older and maybe aren't as tech savvy.
Well, and they're actually living the word community. There's the cross-generational connection that happens.
And there's a lot of that going on, but we just need more of it.
Yeah, we do. And then the raising of that awareness. Paul is signaling me we're going to go for a break. When we come back, I want to hear from Christine, but I also think it's important to talk about the various definitions. It's not just all dementia. It's not all Alzheimer's. You know, that how do we differentiate some of this stuff?
Absolutely.
We'll be back.
If you are like the majority of Americans, you want to continue living in a familiar environment throughout your maturing years. In fact, according to many surveys, 82% of homeowners overwhelmingly prefer to age in place, which means living in their current homes safely, independently, and comfortably, regardless of age or ability level. With over 30 years of combined experience in residential, commercial, hospitality, and destination resorts fields, Your Home for a Lifetime is a company dedicated to empowering you to maintain your quality of life and independence by helping you make your house your home for a lifetime. Do you want to reorganize or remodel your home? Do you want to add a full bathroom and possibly a bedroom on the main floor? Are you looking to make your kitchen more functional? Is an aging parent moving in, or your child is moving out, or even moving back in? Call Your Home for a Lifetime at 949-492-1872 or check them out on the web at yourhomeforalifetime.com and find out how they can help you make your house your home for a lifetime.
All right.
Okay, we're back. Okay, so Christine, let's hear from you. Okay, how did you get into this? Especially as a millennial, like, why are you sitting here?
Yeah, so it's actually interesting. When I graduated from college, I entered into that job market where it was trying to figure out what jobs are available. What does it look like for someone that's just starting out? And I've always had an interest in older adults and working with older adults. Mm-hmm. I got my master's degree in gerontology from USC, and really that was kind of the building block. And, mm-hmm. and I'm glad that I had to choose that route in a way, mm-hmm. that just really getting into the field and finding meaningful work that improves the community.
And you said that you were kind of drawn to that field because of personal experience of what you saw with your parents, maybe dealing with what, your grandparents or?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So my grandfather lived to be 96, very healthy, actually worked until he was in his early 90s at an antique store. So I really saw what healthy aging looked like. Could also see, other stories. And in my mom's church, there's a lot of people that we would take in after maybe a spouse passed away and they didn't have a place to go for the holidays or had a complicated relationship with their family.
Right. Which happens a lot. It's just we don't talk about it. Right. And so how did you, I know you're involved with Alzheimer's, and then you're, mm-hmm. you're a general manager at a collaborative in Orange County, which I think, Patty, it's relatively recent, right? A couple of years, maybe? Three years?
It actually was born in 2008, right in the midst of the recession.
Okay.
And it was the brainchild of our president and CEO, Jim McAleer, and Cheryl Moronk, who at the time was the CEO at the Council on Aging.
Okay.
And Holly Hagler, who is the CEO at SeniorServe, the largest provider of Meals on Wheels in Orange County. So these great minds got together and said the not-for-profits in Orange County who deal primarily with issues of older adults and services for older adults, mm-hmm. we need to put our heads together mm-hmm. and look at how we can really optimize what we do, reduce redundancies, look at shared services
right.
and collective advocacy for the people we serve. So Christine has been the general manager for 3 years.
And give the name of the group and give the website, because I think people can check it out while we're talking. So go ahead, Christine.
Yeah, so the group is called the Orange County Aging Services Collaborative, and that's OCAgingServicesCollaborative.org. And so currently there's 30 members of the collaborative, nonprofit and county agencies. And to be honest, on the website, it's a really good way to learn what types of agencies mm-hmm. and the major agencies
that are in
Orange County. But yeah, the main reason was born out of that advocacy voice. Some of us were doing advocacy separate from each other, but really coming together and saying this is what we need to talk about with elected officials, whether it's Meals on Wheels, whether it was cuts to adult day programming, really to build that infrastructure.
Well, and I think it's anybody who's spent a minute on a board of a nonprofit, realizes that approach is actually very smart and very mm-hmm. efficient and resource maximizing for nonprofits with any kind of shared focus. So this makes perfect sense that this would happen, and it was born out of the necessity probably of the recession a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But talk about some of the stuff that group does. I mean, I know there's probably some brainstorming and some think tanking and all that stuff, but what other stuff? I mean, how's the outreach out of that group versus talking inside the bubble kind of?
So we could talk a little bit about something that we're just starting with, the strategic plan for aging.
Okay.
It's something that Jim McAleer has been really leading the way and recently working with our board of supervisors, with the Office on Aging. And really, it's been taking a while to get all the community buy-in that we've needed, but we've been talking about for a long time, how can we identify 3 to 4 areas where we can really move the needle.
Mm-hmm.
Because no one's really taking ownership of it individually.
Mm-hmm.
We would take ownership of, the needs for dementia in the county.
Mm-hmm.
But, how to best work to work together and create a plan. And then Patty actually is in leadership of our advanced care planning initiative that the collaborative is working on. That might be interesting.
What kind of, before Patty, so what, either one of you actually, so what are some of those areas that, that are looking like we could take ownership of?
Right. So definitely transportation, which we touched about a little earlier. Transportation, housing, definitely nutrition. So right now, Meals on Wheels actually has a wait list. You can be qualified. You can have your name in the queue, but you might not be able to receive services right away. A lot of things where why not look at it all together and see how we can make an impact together.
Well, I'd like to extend this to you guys. I mean, this is sort of not necessarily an aside. I think it ties in because, again, all of this stuff that looks like it's individually standalone, in fact, all makes the fabric and that fabric of our lives.
Absolutely.
And it's very intertwined, right? So I'm going to basically put this out to you guys on June, and I might get the wrong date, and they're going to basically take my ambassadorship away, but June 11th, I think, is Global Wellness Day. And this is something that's relatively about 2 years old. It was started by a lady who had a thyroid situation in Turkey. Her family owns a spa and a hotel in the hospitality industry, and she basically reached out to her network of people in the spa industry and started this sort of Global Wellness Day, one day of awareness where it's like one day changes your life. And the manifesto, if you will, of Global Wellness Day is, you know, drink enough water, go to bed at 10, very achievable stuff. But the whole point is it's not really the list of to-dos as much as just raising the awareness of the importance of wellness and that the fact that wellness isn't really a one-size-fits-all. It's more of a balance in life kind of approach, right? So I think what would be interesting is the first year, you know, was you know, all the hotel properties joined in and all this stuff. But this year, our focus is try to get it out to more of a community involvement and awareness, right? So all activities are trying to be focused on, you know, maybe getting into schools, things of that nature. We have the little pink paddle, you know, with the I Said Yes to Global Wellness, and we have a couple of little catchy little things going on. So I'm going to put it out to both of you guys because I think there may be a connection where we take something that's very youthful-oriented like that in a way, the way it's packaged visually, and also say, look, this applies to everybody.
Sure.
And we can break it in. You talk about nutrition. You're talking about transportation for life enhancing, not just life sustaining, that there could be a wellness factor in this. And if you guys are interested, let me know, and we'll sign you guys up. The involvement is minimal other than just, hey, here's the paddle, let's take a picture kind of thing and put it out. But I think what it does and what we're trying to do with the show is that it takes us out of that myopic thinking on some of this stuff. Right, it's not about age. It's about universally something that impacts people,
and it really is about wellness that helps to frame a reduction of risk for some of these cognitive diseases. So, wellness is paramount, and if we reduce stress, if we eat well, if we rest, if we stay hydrated, if we have nutritional support where we're eating the right kinds of foods, then we reduce our risk.
No, absolutely. I mean, and you, I asked you, and you said yes. Thank you for being on the panel for dementia at the Kasem Care conference on aging that's coming up in April.
I'm looking very forward to it.
Right. So again, you know, here's Carrie Kasem, who's basically leading the charge. Up to a year ago, there was no visitation bills in any state that basically allowed the child to ask for visitation of their parent. All visitation rights were basically in the hand of the spouse, and now we have five. She told me yesterday five that have already gotten bills passed, and they'll probably be about another five maybe by the end of the year. So here's a millennial that's leading the charge, starting off with elder abuse, and now we're talking about a conference on aging.
Right,
that's touching on all this other stuff, right?
All because she had to deal with a very personal issue.
Exactly. And so one of the things that I promised, and I'm always halfway through the book, Carrie, but she asked me, I'm going to probably moderate the dementia panel, and she asked me to read Dr. David Perlmutter's Grain Brain.
Oh, yes.
Right? Because it speaks exactly to what you were talking about with nutrition. You know, what you put in your body and the possible impact that it has on everything, including your cognitive along the way, you know? So I don't know whether it's something that is only of interest for somebody who's over 65 or someone who's 16 even.
We have to be interested in it from birth.
Right, exactly.
We have to be thinking about a nutritional support and nutritional savvy from the moment we start putting anything into our bodies because it impacts our brain. The old adage that your mother used to say is if you have a test, make sure you have either eggs in the morning or something with protein so you can think past 10 o'clock. We have to start thinking about our performance altogether is based on how we're treating our bodies. It's really important.
Rather than the sort of only the convenience aspect of things and you know, we live in a world where, you know, especially with the internet and everybody's, you know, computers in their pocket, is, you know, we're living at the speed of light, honestly. And you almost have to have a very disciplined approach to get off that kind of path.
Right.
But there's certain things that we really need and owe to ourselves, I think, the gift of actually focusing on. One of them is nutrition. We have a society that's obese, right? And it's like, you know, it breaks my heart to see somebody who's 16 years old basically malnutritioned, basically, and because of the choices that they're making and eating that are reinforced over and over and over through media or whatever, that this is the way to eat.
And where good choices aren't supported. I mean, I'm going to be the first one to say I've fought the tendency to be a little more plump. It's those Irish jeans and all those potatoes in my history. But intentionally, since October, I'm down about 18 pounds.
Good for you.
And it's not so much that I'm doing anything drastic. It's that I'm making really smarter choices, looking for things that I know are going to optimize my performance as a human being. Because I'm busy.
Yeah.
And I want to be in tip-top, optimized shape.
Right.
And I want to be able to think clearly. And part of that is what we put into.
And you take a sort of maybe more of a preparation. Maybe on a Sunday night, you make your salads and you have something that's basically in the fridge and you grab it and go, because we are busy people. Or when you go make a decision at a restaurant or something, you're picking with a certain awareness of what you're going to eat and what you're not going to eat.
Right.
And we all want the bread and we all want the fatty stuff and the fried chicken and all that stuff. But
you can have a little bit.
Exactly. Treat yourself to that. And that's where that definition of wellness and balance is that, you know, don't deny yourself that, but don't be eating that every day, because if you decide to do that, there will be consequences to it.
And we want to keep that brain as healthy as possible.
Right.
So one of the ways that is suggested will help to reduce risk is by eating a diet that's very much like the Mediterranean diet.
Right.
Dark green leafy vegetables, that dark purple cabbage, cooking things in olive oil rather than bacon grease. Eating proteins like fish and chicken that are high in the omega-3s.
Right.
Low in the bad kinds of fats. Even what we decided to feed our little dog is ground bison.
Mm-hmm.
Because as I did the research for what my husband and I are going to eat, bison is one of those meats that's flavorful, low in fat, high in the omega-3s, and so it's very healthful. So we need to just look at and make intentional choices in what we eat.
Somebody tweeted in and wanted to know, what about just popping a pill like a supplement? Is that as good as... I think the answer is no, but does that better than nothing? Omega-3 oils and pills and supplements.
Okay, so some people don't want to grate ginger and put it in hot water. They want to maybe take it in a pill. They want to take maybe echinacea, you know, instead of boiling it in water and drinking it as a tea.
Because we're a pill society. We just want to pop a pill.
But I will just say this, okay? I do that. I take some supplements, but you got to be just kind of a little bit conscious. You have to have an awareness. You can't just basically pop stuff in without taking the time to actually at least understand what you are doing and how it works in the overall scheme of things, right? That's okay, but an industry that basically says because we call ourselves a supplement versus a drug, we are somehow less regulated.
Well, that
should give you a red flag that not everything that's on the shelf is something you should be putting.
They've
in your
done
body.
Studies that you think you're getting so much in there, and they take it apart, and it's a half of what
you know.
It
fish,
says it is.
Fish oil, and again, everything sort of has to have a right balance, because you could overdo it on vitamin C, you can overdo it on fish oil, calcium, you can overdo it on echinacea. If you take bopping echinacea every day, by the time you really need your immunity system to get a little boost, you've already gotten it so used to having an influx of echinacea, it's almost useless. You have to up the dose. Does that sound familiar?
Right.
The entry drug is the one pill, and then you're going to go to 1,000 milligrams, well, or a bigger one.
And I was worried. I've had other people, nutritionists, say that if you just pop a pill, your system can't absorb all that, so you just pee it right out of your body here. Right. You know?
And you totally know it.
As opposed to taking in a natural form here.
Well,
let's get down and dirty here.
Well, it's really important before anyone takes any kind of supplements that they check with their physician, because some supplements can actually counteract the prescription medications that people need.
Point.
So that's really important. Also, the time of day that some supplements are taken, it can impact whether or not they're absorbed properly. Some need to be taken with food. Some need to be taken on an empty stomach. So talk with your doctor, nurse practitioner. Make sure that you're not going to be taking something that not only isn't going to do you some benefit for which you're paying big money,
but could actually harm you.
Right.
I mean, think about what you eat. Like, let's say you have a dinner. Okay, forget about even the supplement or the drugs, right? If you have a dinner, and your choice of dinner is X, and then the next night you have a choice of dinner that's Y, okay? It affects your sleep. It affects how you basically diet. If you're eating a heavy meal late at night, we all did it at a certain point, but at some point in life, your system is telling you, this is not a good idea.
Right.
You're going to wake up really the next morning unhappy, and it's going to drag your whole day.
I think that's where baby boomers have led the fight. I think we're a healthier bunch than previous generations. We pay more attention to what at least most of my friends and stuff do.
We are because if you just look at the incidence of heart disease, the difference between what was happening in the 60s and the diet that was common in the United States, we may still have this problem with obesity, but we are looking at heart disease differently, and we're able to control it, and many times it's because of diet choices.
Yeah. Now, I know that's not across the country. There are parts of the country, I'm going to say the South or the Midwest where I grew up, that's still more meat and potatoes, heavy salt, old-fashioned
diets. But I'm guessing that even in those areas,
it's
the approach to cooking is maybe with healthier oils and things of that nature, because the age generationally is deciding that. We're going to run out of time, I know, and we could probably talk for, God knows how many hours on this. But I think one of the things that has constantly come up with me, with people, is there's this sort of misnomer that when it comes to dementia or cognitive impairment or Alzheimer's, people tend to put everything in a neat little box and call it Alzheimer's or call it dementia, And like I said, we said earlier, they associate it with certain age comes with that, right? If you ladies would take a minute or two and just give some insight, because there's so many versions. So maybe touch on some of the stuff that's more common cases.
Yeah. Well, what we know is that there are more than 70, perhaps even as many as 100, currently identified forms of dementia.
Wow.
So dementia is rather like an umbrella term, kind of like saying you've got cancer.
Right.
Well, you want to know what kind of cancer.
Exactly.
Because the manifestations, the symptoms, the course of the disease, and the treatment are all going to be different depending upon what kind of cancer it is.
And the seriousness of it. There are some cancers you can survive. There are some that are
diagnosed.
Exactly. And there are some forms of dementia that can be reversed if properly looked at medically. So some people might present with what looks like Alzheimer's disease, and in fact, it's just a long-term kind of subclinical urinary tract disease or urinary tract infection. And that
from
can
taking
be treated.
Too many supplements that you peed on.
Well, not.
Thank you for sharing.
Not sure that's the cause.
Okay.
But people who have either poorly managed blood sugar or low thyroid or a B vitamin deficiency, those folks could be suffering from what looks like a cognitive impairment that's very much like Alzheimer's, but we can have a physician treat that and they get back to their normal functioning.
Is there a test for
Alzheimer's? So there's actually what I'm hearing is there's actually positive hope if you actually don't just walk in where the predisposed concept mm-hmm. of what you're dealing with and actually do it early enough.
Exactly.
Because you could actually find yourself in a situation where it's a manageable situation.
Right. Precisely. Right. We need early detection and appropriate diagnosis of what's causing the dementia condition, because maybe it's something reversible through treatment. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's early enough if it is Alzheimer's. And Alzheimer's typically represents about 2/3 of all dementia mm-hmm. that presents. Well, the earlier people start on the treatments that we currently have, generally speaking, the better the impact of those treatments.
And I tried to pipe up, is there a test?
Well, there's not one test for Alzheimer's or for dementia. It's a medical workup that involves testing blood chemistries, testing for B vitamin levels, testing one's thyroid. We want to check out the person as a holistic kind of thing to see what could be causing this dementia. Perhaps there's a lesion on the brain. Mm-hmm. Perhaps there is a series of little strokes and the person needs treatment for that kind of condition. So it's looking at that total person and doing a medical workup by a qualified physician and probably also some neuropsychological tests to determine whether or not it's a dementia like Lewy body dementia mm-hmm. that causes perhaps not immediately the same kind of memory loss distinction, right. but hallucinations and language problems and behavioral issues. Perhaps it's something that is caused from long-term alcohol use. Well, that's very differently treated.
Sports injury.
Traumatic brain injury.
The big thing.
Exactly. But we can look at these different presentations, mm-hmm. and then the doctor can decide what kind of treatment might be appropriate. There's one form of dementia, the normal pressure hydrocephalus, looks a lot like Alzheimer's disease, mm-hmm. causes problems with people's gait and mm-hmm. balance and falls. But with just a very minor surgery and a little stent just to remove the fluid pressure on mm-hmm. the brain, that person can be back to normal functioning. Mm-hmm. So wouldn't it be a shame if people were afraid to go and talk to their doctor and get a diagnosis when they could be treated? And maybe we can head off symptoms that become irreversible.
Well, and you can argue that this approach, this not one size fits all approach,
right,
which we tend to do as a society, which is really kind of sad, is it applies to Parkinson's, applies to all kinds of different things. In fact, you could say that the way we deal with seniors, okay, and seniors' needs, is not really an individualized situation.
Just the fact that right. you become a senior at 55 and now you're going to live to be 105, that's 50 years. I can't believe we're all the same.
Well,
let's
look at another
we
one.
We haven't broken it down to any more
We talk about disabled. And we talk about right. disabled until we had, prolonged wars recently. We got into sort of a norm that disabled is something that happens on the rare occasion with somebody, or it's a result of aging, right. or a result of something like that, somebody we see in a wheelchair, it must be an older person. Okay, those people, we would basically say, you got another maybe 5 years, 10 years, we're not going to change the infrastructure of society to accommodate these people for 5 or 10 years. Now you got income influx of people that are injured, that have been in service, that are basically in their 20s, and you're looking at 80 years
of care.
And we still have an attitude that is not to accommodate for universal accessibility, for benefiting of everybody regardless of capabilities.
Because all of those people, old, disabled, retarded, Parkinson's, whatever, we put them somewhere else, right?
Guess what? We're built out in Orange County.
I don't think we're supposed to
there
use
is
the word
no,
retarded.
I know. I grinched at you from here.
But they are us.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right. We right. all have
family members, ourselves. Yeah.
Right. So we have to be inclusive.
Yes. Right. So when people fall by the wayside and need help, we push them aside and say, take care of them, put them in a facility, and move on. We don't want to deal with it or talk about it.
By the way, let's not underestimate what we're talking about here. This is a major paradigm shift that needs to happen in thinking. And it has to happen not on a societal level or a municipality level like you were talking about advocating. It has to happen also on an institutional level. The people that are in the senior industry, the people that are in the housing industry, mm-hmm. that has to really permeate through, and there has to be a change. We can no longer be dealing with things And the reality is, what is it, 78 million people, boomers?
Yeah.
And about the same for millennials? Okay, I'm the lost generation. We're kind of a little sandwich thing. But basically, the numbers are astronomical in terms of just like the population you're going to have to address. And if we don't do that, we are going to basically be... It's going to be a mess.
We're going to institutionalize a heck of a lot of people here. There's a need for
We don't even have that infrastructure in place.
We won't be able to. We won't have the money for it.
Right, exactly.
And it's not the right way for people to age unless that's the only correct option for
Thank you, Patty.
Them.
Exactly.
Okay. She's nodding over here. Do you agree as a millennial? What are you going to do to change this? It's up to you. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's so many complex issues, but it is finding... solutions in the community, and not because institutionalized care is so high per year for someone to be in a nursing home, and it's not the right level of care for a lot of people. For some people, it is not to have the option go away, but
it's not. Well,
and we're not knocking. You know, we're not knocking caregivers, but you know, the fact that we have not had to have regulations that govern stuff like that until very, very recently, okay, it tells you exactly how much there is to do. Mm-hmm. To change this mindset, and you know, along the organization, the collaborative that you guys have, I think goes a long ways to try to at least have a conversation across organizations to have sort of a unifying voice.
That's an interesting point. Let's end with that. Do all of these groups work together in one cause, or are everybody fighting for their own little slice of the federal fund and the private checkbooks? Are they all fighting each other, or are they all working together?
You know, to be honest, in Orange County, I've been pleasantly surprised that it does have a true collaboration feel. As the staff person, I haven't really noticed a lot of that kind of interaction, all playing in the same sandbox, and a lot of them have been here for a long time. To highlight really quick, we're having an event coming up on April 1st. It's the second annual Leadership Forum on Aging, specifically focusing on the 2016 election. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be talking about federal issues, state issues, and having a time with panelists. Assemblyman Don Wagner and Assemblyman Matthew Harper will be on the panel. But really, there isn't a good forum for people to be talking about these issues in a really meaningful way.
Giving people permission
to learn about the issues, mm-hmm. and then say, this is my personal experience.
Bring it out into the open. Everybody's just doing this on their own. We saw that with the veterans issues. Right. People aren't paying attention.
Two things I'd be interested in, and I would be there other than it's my wife's 40th birthday and we're going to Hawaii.
Oh.
So no. I'm not going to be there. But there's two things I'd be interested to see come out of this and see whether mm-hmm. they do or not. One is if, in fact, there's genuinely innovative things that are discussed. And they may be very ambitious things, but actually innovative things that are big picture things, if that come out of that. And the other thing that would be of interest to me, because I think we all risk the fact, unless we make a real serious effort, to talk inside a bubble.
Right.
To the same people.
To the same people, to each other, about reaffirming, oh, yeah, we really care.
Are we bringing the community in? Yeah.
So how is it that you're going to engage beyond city manager versus the head of an organization, you know, like the Council on Aging? You know, how are we going to engage those people? How are we going to engage the business leader that's in the Downtown Business Association that is basically going to advocate for that trolley, for example, to provide that transportation situation?
How are we going to get
them to actually understand that that's a priority that they want to basically be vested in?
And that's the issue with all policy things. How do you move the needle? How do you get people behind it? How do you rally people to a movement?
Proactively versus reactively, because a lot of times it's because we're facing
a crisis,
the precipice, we're facing the cliff, and that's when we react.
We invite them. We get very active on social media, on Twitter. We are really inviting people to participate and to bring their concerns to a forum like this. We recently had three different town halls where people could come to our offices and tell us what they want as they're dealing with issues of aging.
So tell us, we're down to our last minute here. Tell us how to reach you and how to come to this event.
The website and where the people can find it.
So for the event, you just go to ocagingservicescollaborative.org. You can always call me directly as well, 949-757-3775. I'm taking RSVPs, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
And Patty, why don't you give the information about Alzheimer's?
Alzheimer's Orange County can be reached at 844-373-4400. Our website is ALZ. oc.org, and we are available to answer any questions related to any kind of dementia issue, and we invite you to come and take advantage of our free programs and services.
Thank you, ladies, for being here. I will definitely have you guys back. It's been awesome.
Thank you, Rod.
Thank you.
All right, thanks
Happy
so much.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.